it's over and you don't want me around. Now I've got nowhere to run, baby, nowhere to hide, nowhere to run but away. I never thought of other girls and I never was untrue. For me you were the only one until you said we were through. Now I've got
Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Chris Nelson and Hugh Kramer from The Morticians. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is November 2nd, 2013, and I'm talking with two members of The Morticians, Chris Nelson and Hugh Kramer. Guys, if you don't mind, could you give us your full name, date of birth, and hometown, please?
I'm Christopher J. James Nelson, born and raised in Bayport, Minnesota. Birth date, August 19th, 1947.
I am Hugh Kramer. I was born November 27th, Thanksgiving, 1947. Stillwater native.
Where did you go to high school, and what year did you graduate?
Both of us went to Stillwater High School and graduated in 1965.
Do you recall the very first local band you saw perform live back in the 1960s?
For me, it was the Trashmen with Tom Cafferty, who our parents knew each other through Cotillion, which was a dance group. We saw them, and we both thought, hey, that's cool. Let's maybe we should do something like that.
Do you recall where you saw them, Hugh?
I believe it was Matamida or White Bear Lake. And then they played again in Stillwater at the Armory, because I can remember they had a Corvair van with the Trashmen all painted up on the side.
Would this be 1964?
Probably late 63, early 64.
Chris, how about you? Do you recall the first local band you saw perform?
I think probably in 63 I saw the Trashmen in I believe it was at the White Bear Armory. And I remember going up north, maybe to Duluth, with some older guys and seeing Mike Wagner in the Bops. And I thought Mike Wagner's hair was impressive.
And when did you start playing musical instruments?
I started playing the guitar when they invited me to join the band in 1963. I'd never touched a guitar. I had no idea what it was. We went over to Music Land and bought Kingston guitars. So I recall they were $30 a piece. $30 rings a bell for some reason.
Are these acoustic?
No. It's just a slab of probably elm with necks that bowed terribly.
What kind of amp?
My first amp, we were talking about that the other day, I had a Heilmann amp that had white upholstery on it that was probably as big as a Fender Dual Showman. And I think the only time that I used it was the first two dances we played, and I didn't know how to play the guitar, so I just had it on standby. So the red light was on, but I didn't have it on, so you couldn't hear. But I looked really good playing the guitar.
Did that come from Musicland also?
I think that came through Doc Lee, who was our manager, our first manager. He was a chiropractor from Stillwater, and he had a little music store in Hudson, and Huey and Tommy ran into him somehow.
Well, we were down looking for amps, and I took bass lessons from a guy by the name of Danny Matchie, who we had as a teacher in Hudson, and that's how we started the relationship with Doc, and he took a real interest in us and wanted to know if we would like him to be a manager and help us get dates and all that. And of course, being young dumb kids, we said sure. It's really a good thing, because he was a gadabout and liked to talk and liked to promote live music. At that time was kind of an anomaly, and it was good to have people other than us coming forward and pushing the the sound and the whole idea of the morticians, which actually my dad, as I recall, we were shopping around for a name or thinking of what we could have, and everybody had car names and kind of silly names. And my dad said, "What about the morticians?" We thought, well, that sounds morbid or whatever. And he said, well, no, Titian means in Latin or Greek, it means songs. Oh, well, that makes sense. And, of course, we spell it M-O-R-E and then T-I-S-H-A-N-S. But in the future, now I have seen that it doesn't mean songs, but Titian means joy or happiness. But if you look at the Hebrew translation of Tish, that is a religious ceremony that includes song and scripture. So there was a word there, Titian, that he loosely translated.
It sounds like a lot of study went into this name. I didn't even know that we'd gone into Hebrew. Wow. I thought my recollection of it is we were practicing in Hugh's dad's living room.
Right.
And it was loud and obnoxious, and he came in and said something like, it sounds like music for the dead or something. Why don't you call yourself the Morticians? And that's what I remember. I don't remember any Hebrew, but...
It's Mahavishnu
approved.
Yeah.
So, Hugh, do you recall the first bass guitar you bought and your first amp?
Well, the amp I got from Doc Lee, from his store, Ampeg B15. That was the cool one with the flip top. So it exposed those glowing 6L6 tubes and still an iconic amplifier. Matter of fact, Ampeg or whoever's making Ampeg now has released a re-release of that B15. But we went over as a group. We were, completely sick of these cheap guitars and went over to B Sharp, met Jimmy, and Jimmy really took us under his wing. I bought a 64 Precision bass. Chris and Tommy got 64 Stratocasters. And we had custom-made coffin-shaped guitar cases for those Stratocasters. So just one case and three guitars, one bass, two strats, and for the grand total of $525, which we paid for, and we were on the way.
And I took my Strat after Jimmy decided he didn't want us to play Strats anymore. I took that home. My dad had a belt sander, and it was green. We had the green-colored ones, which I think I've read recently are the really collectible ones because they didn't make many green ones. And I took that belt sander, and I sanded her right down to bare wood and sold it to one of the guys that lived upstairs for $50. So I think when those were made in probably 63, I think a 63 Strat is probably worth a little more than $50, but that's what I got for it.
So when does the band first come together, and who's in the original lineup?
Well, 63, we played this turkey trot thing, and Jim Bancroft, who was in my wedding, actually, was my Hugh and Bump, well, his nickname was Bump Bancroft. Hugh and Bump were the two guys in my wedding, but Bump was going to be the singer. But I think he realized pretty quickly that he couldn't sing, and I think we realized pretty early on that he couldn't sing either. But we did the turkey trot with Bump, and we had six songs that we played, and there were probably vocals on three of them.
Where was the turkey trot held?
At St. Mike's Church in Stillwater, at St. Michael's.
Do you recall any of the six songs you performed?
I think we may have done Surfin' Bird. And the rest of them I don't recall. But I'm sure if anybody that went there, it's probably pretty well ingrained in their heads because we must have played each song 10 times to get through the night. It was awful. It was just awful.
It's almost a guarantee they were all three-chord songs, which would encompass about 10 or 20,000, I would guess.
But once again, I didn't have my amp turned on, but I looked really good playing that Kingston guitar at the time. And then we didn't play again until the following February.
So we've got Jim Bump on vocals, we got Hugh on bass, Chris on guitar, and who's the drummer?
Pinky Hirschleb. Roy Hirschleb was our drummer.
And now Did Doc Lee get you your first job?
I think that was kind of gotten through maybe word of mouth or whatever. I lived about 3-4 blocks from St. Michael's. I didn't go to that school in church, but I think that was just kind of word of mouth, and we might have got all of $15 or something for that. Live bands and dances at that time were something brand new.
Were there other bands on the bill that night?
No, just us.
Just us and our six songs.
How did it feel to be up performing live in front of the public?
I think from my vantage point that we were probably scared to death, and we realized that if we were ever going to do anything, we had to practice. Between that and our second job, we practiced an awful lot and hopefully got better.
Chris, do you remember the second job?
I remember the second job was at the Thalen Youth Center in Stillwater, and we used to go there. I know I was in Bayport through 8th grade and then went to the big city of Stillwater in 9th grade. And we had the Bayport Canteen was at the Legion Club, and you'd go dance to records and stuff. And I think that was part of the reason that Hugh and Tom asked me to be in the band, because they came down to Bayport to check out the girls one time, and I actually danced, so I got asked to be in the band.
So the original lineup was a three-piece?
No, we still needed, Pinky, needed the drummer. So Tommy and Hugh were kind of instrumental in getting things going, and Roy was the drummer for the high school band, so he just was automatic, and I got chosen because I was from Bayport and I could dance.
So
they were still scouting things out when they asked me.
Of course, my parents, and I'm sure Tom's parents, said, well, fine, you can go downtown and, you know, of course, we didn't have driver's license at the time, you know, don't go to Bayport or whatever. And of course, that's the first thing we do is go down and stand on the highway and hitchhike to Bayport. And of course, it was a whole new collection of young, what we thought were very interesting, beautiful gals. And here was this one guy, this mop-haired guy that was dancing with them. And we thought, hey, that is cool. And then in addition to that, in 9th grade, Tommy and Chris were in choir together. So, you know, they sang through several years in high school.
And what was the hot spot called in Bayport?
That was at the Bayport Legion, the old Bayport Legion. And it was just called the Bayport Canteen. And then Stillwater, this Thalen Youth Center, that was the canteen in Stillwater, too.
And how long does the first version of the band last with Jim as the lead singer?
That was only through the second job at the Thalen Youth Center. So he was with us for the Turkey Trot, the original thing, and then the second one was at the Thalen Youth Center. And then shortly thereafter, I think by mutual agreement, Bump, Jim Bancroft left the band.
So now we're into 1964?
Yep.
And you have to remember that this, like the Thalen Hall Youth Center, they would attract teens there. But up to that point, all they were doing was spinning records. And so there was a stage, but it was only used for a disc jockey, as it were. And so this idea and notion of a band, live band coming and playing was pretty exciting, I think. And we still have the contract from that first Thalen Hall Youth Center for now the amazing amount of $40 that we played. And that was with Jim. But then it boiled down to the four of us that continued.
So it was only Jim for the first two jobs?
Yes. Yep.
Then who took over vocals after Jim leaves the band?
And Tommy and I started... Tom, I think Tom sang more at first, and then I started trying to do a little bit of harmony stuff, and then pretty soon it didn't take long, and we were sharing the lead duties, but we were trying to do a lot more harmony, so we were both singing at the same time.
There were bands that were devoted or focused on instrumentals, Dick Dale and all of the surfing music and all that, and to stand out, here we had two, or from my vantage point, we had two lead singers, which was very unusual. A lot of bands have one lead singer. And so we really tried to tailor the material with harmony and really tried to use the strength of vocals to carry the band, essentially.
Now, is Doc Lee managing the band at this point?
Yes.
And booking the band, too?
Mm-hmm.
What radio station did you get in Stillwater?
KDWB. Yeah, it was WDGY. Channel 63, and WDGY was what, 1130?
1130,
okay.
So you had access to all of the top 40 songs.
Oh, yeah. And at night, I think I could get the Chicago station.
WLS, I believe?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Out of Chicago. Now, something interesting happens in February 1964. The Beatles play on Ed Sullivan. How did that impact the local band scene and your band in particular?
I remember, the biggest thing I remember about the Beatles is never being able to figure out any of the chords that they were playing. I thought that was the most advanced music that I'd ever heard. Hence, we didn't do a lot of Beatles stuff. It wasn't where you could go to the computer and go to Chordy and find out what the chords were. And since I've found that a lot of that stuff is pretty easy, but it's not Chuck Berry three-chord music. So that was the biggest surprise for me.
And the thing about the Beatles, it seemed like up till then there was always a star singer and then a vocal or a instrumental backup group. So, and here was a band with one name rather than so-and-so and the so-and-sos. And I think it was really a change, from that point on, I think the band notion became much, much stronger, that people were willing to listen to a band, not just a single solo artist and his backups.
So as 64 progresses, what happens to the Morticians?
We practice, and start playing.
And you're practicing at your house, Hugh?
Mostly, that's right. I lived just a couple blocks from the junior high school in a bigger, older house, and we had a front room parlor, and my parents were very gracious to allow the pollution in. But I think they were, they've always been very supportive of, you know, whatever I did, and I think they had to keep their neighbors or friends probably addressed as to what the direction was going to be, but it was all good. Roy and I went to the same church, and so I think anything I did with Roy was really good, so it all worked out.
And Roy is Pinky's real name.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you're still in high school. Were you allowed to play jobs on school nights or just weekends?
I remember the four parents got together one time, and they were worried, I'm sure, about where this was going, this crazy rock and roll thing. And it seems to me they came up with the idea that they'd allow us a 25-mile radius from Stillwater. And it seems to me that shortly thereafter, Doc Lee booked us in Rice Lake, Wisconsin or something. And he was... somebody might have had a driver's license. I didn't have my driver's license yet, so Doc Lee would drive us around. He had an old Pontiac station wagon, and we rented a trailer and had all our stuff in the trailer. And Doc would drive because some of us couldn't drive yet. But the 25-mile radius went out probably within weeks of this big parental meeting.
Did they limit you to weekends only?
I think we almost limited ourselves, and at the time, there wasn't much going on during the week anywhere around anyway. It was always Friday night, Saturday night stuff, mostly Saturday nights, as I recall.
So what would be some of the other venues that you played at during 1964?
High schools, that was real popular. They obviously had a gymnasium that, if it wasn't being used for sports, it was a good place for people to go, not only just Stillwater, but St. Paul and areas around, some in Wisconsin. And then the ballrooms that were well-established in Minnesota and Wisconsin had a well-established old-time music night, Saturday night, and for these ballroom owners to simply open up on a Friday night for the, quote, teen dance was, it was just a win-win situation. So Doc found us into a lot of these established ballrooms in Wisconsin and in Minnesota. That was really good because the acoustics were great. There was some travel obviously involved, but each time we'd go to a different town, we had a chance to meet new people and essentially, you know, build a fan base, you know, one dance at a time, so to speak.
Did you come into the Twin Cities to play?
We didn't work in town as much as a lot of the groups did. We didn't mind the travel once we really started traveling. We did an awful lot of stuff in Wisconsin. We were in Iowa, northern Minnesota, western Minnesota a lot, because a lot of the groups didn't want to travel. And at that time, I think I talked to David Wachter, Dave Anthony, about it, that he had 300-400 different venues that he could book. And, I mean, the Bayport Legion in Bayport, Minnesota had us play once, and every VFW club, once the dances started going, and I think a lot of that came from the ballrooms, that the George's Ballroom in New Ulm, the New Ulm Legion Club would say, gee, George got a whole lot of people there for those kids, you know, that loud, obnoxious rock and roll music. And I remember George complaining about paying us $150 for a four-hour job when he could get Whoopi John and all 20 guys in Whoopi John's band for the same price. He just couldn't understand that. Yet the crowds were always as good for the rock as it was for the old time.
The Doc Lee managing and booking, I think at some point he thought that he had done quite a bit, but he struck up a relationship with Dave Anthony Wachter. And so pretty soon we were in Dave Anthony's wing. I don't know what financial arrangements were made between Dave and Doc, but Dave's strength was certainly in the outlying areas, and, you know, Marsh Production and Central and the in-town agencies, of course, their strength was with the Minneapolis and the St. Paul bands and those venues in there. And we did play colleges, Hamlin and University of Minnesota and McAllister and so on and so forth, but most of our jobs were out of the metro area.